This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik. Yesterday marked the final phase of schools in Malaysia reopening after several months of lockdown to control the COVID-19 pandemic. So we're checking in today with consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Savarnandan and educational psychologist Tan Ching Yi on what parents can do to ensure that children transition well back to school. We'll also be discussing what challenges children may be facing during this period, what challenges parents are facing as well, and also how parents and teachers can identify signs of problems. How are the both of you today, Dr. Rajini and Ching Yi?
Good, thanks.
Fine, thank you.
All right. So to start with, I think, first of all, based on global evidence and what is happening in the country right now for us, how safe is it for children to be back in school right now, Dr. Rajini?
I think looking at our local context, yes, our case numbers have been low. And I think, you know, kudos to the Ministry of Health, because I think they've been not suddenly opening things, as some countries have done, but they've been doing it gradually. And I think testing the waters to see if, you know, by opening businesses first, whether that increases the numbers. And I mean, so far our numbers are lower, but I mean, we can see that transmission is happening locally. And more recently, you know, there've been a few clusters, and mostly people probably working in close proximity to each other. So I think in terms of schooling, we're going to have to open at some point, shall we? And I think, you know, the last few months has seen that online learning is very challenging for various reasons. Access to technology, teachers having the right equipment to be able to deliver, children coping with online learning, especially the younger ones. And I think it's right that they've, you know, started to do it gradually. So yes, I think in our local context, I think it's probably right to start now. And I'm sure they're monitoring to see whether or not there are going to be increase in the number of cases as a result.
I guess some parents are still concerned, rightly so, if we look at some countries where we're seeing subsequent waves, you know, such as Hong Kong, Victoria and Australia, and how schools have had to be closed again following these rises in cases. So on the one hand, we should be prepared for this eventuality, of course. But what do you think we can learn from these countries? Because schools are also a place where people are in close proximity.
Yeah, I think if you look at many of the places where the outbreak started have been places where people have been living in very, I would say, relatively crowded places. You know, the outbreak in Melbourne started in the tower blocks, and not surprisingly, because of the fact that it's a densely populated area. And so, of course, spread is going to be so easy, so much easier. You know, you talk about lifts, you talk about people touching buttons, etc. Even if you look at places like Europe, I mean, Hong Kong is another densely populated area. And I think, again, you know, that explains it. Even in Europe, there have been countries that have opened up. Germany was one. But again, if you look at where the sources of the outbreaks are, they tend to be in, I think, food packing factories. Again, people working in more confined places. And I don't think children have been a source of the spread, or maybe they are, we're not sure. But I think in the UK as well, they opened up for younger children. But then in some areas, they're in lockdown again. And again, they're looking at families who are living in multi-generational settings in a smaller confined area as being sources and places where it's going to easily spread. So I think we have to be on our guard, and I'm sure the Ministry of Health is. And, you know, I think if we take the right precautions, wearing masks, making sure that hand hygiene is kept to, always educating our children about close contact, I think, you know, we hopefully can avoid that.
How has it been for you, Ching Yi? I know your kids have just gone back to school as well. What was the experience like?
Yes, I sent all three of my kids back last week. Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of the parents, myself included, it was a difficult decision to make. And I think we were observing, you know, as the weeks leading up to the opening of schools, and many of us were quite undecided right up to the point, you know, of going to school. And I think for myself, I'm actually quite relieved that school has started, because I agree with Dr. Rajini that, you know, the online learning is just not the same, not as adequate. So I think the children needed to go back to some normality. So I was looking forward to it in the end, once I've decided and calmed myself down about it. Yes, yeah, so, but I think the transition has put us all into a very unsettling feeling, you know, getting back into that routine again after being in lockdown for quite a long time. School-wise, yes.
I think we all know how adults are struggling with the our routines being upended. But Chingyi, what are children struggling with? And we sometimes don't think about what they could be going through. We expect them to follow along, don't we?
I think there are many things that they probably would struggle with. You know, physically, they probably have been out of routine, sleeping late, waking up late, having meals at different times as out of routine. Yeah. I think there's a reason why we all need routines, because it gets us into a rhythm, being comfortable, and, you know, it gets us going, achieving the task that we need to do every day. So I think for a lot of children, it's getting back to that momentum, you know, especially of doing work again. I think in online learning, we definitely reduce a lot of the expectations in a way. So it's going back to the usual way of learning and getting homework and coming back and having the discipline to do it.
Yeah.
So these things, I think they have to get back to it. I think also from a psychosocial perspective, they're not going back to the normal way of life. You know, it wasn't just a normal holiday when they pick up and they resume again. Things have changed when they go back. And it depends on how well we have been informing them and preparing them for school. So for some children, I think, it's an eye-opener when they get to school. There's so many different routines, SOPs, things that they have to do and follow. No longer able to touch their friends or go down for recess. So a lot of things that they have to get used to. I think the older ones maybe cope a little bit better, but the younger ones, and especially those perhaps with learning challenges, they would find it a little bit harder to adapt to the new routine. Yeah.
Dr. Rajini, what are some signs that children may be struggling to transition, apart from the very obvious them not wanting to go to school, but what may be some more subtle signs?
I think mood, looking at their mood, you know, if they're cranky, if they're, you know, across the ages, if they're cranky, if they're sort of maybe talking back or acting out a little. I think, you know, parents need to be aware that it may be their way of releasing stress. You find a lot more defiance maybe in some children, especially some of the teens. You know, those are the common signs. The other thing is being more withdrawn. And I think this is, again, where parents need to be very observant. You know, just because your child is quiet, having gone to school, thank God, after being stuck at home and, you know, creating a ruckus, I would be worried about the child who suddenly become quiet as well. I think it's a very important period for children, and parents need to understand that as well. I know parents are going through stress, and like Chingyi, you know, sending my daughter's a teen, but you know, the preparation in advance, sort of making sure she had enough cloth masks, making sure that you know, she remembers that, you know, please don't go hug your friends because she's a very tactile person. Little things like that, you know, it can be stressful for parents as well. So, you know, sometimes there may be more arguments at home as well. So I think parents just be patient and be aware of any changes in behavior in your children. With children with learning differences, especially, they exhibit stress in a different way. So, you know, if you have a child, say, for example, who is generally very active, they may come across as being more active, more restless. Children on the autism spectrum, they have what we call stimming behavior, a sort of repetitive behavior that they do. And you may find that during this period, it increases significantly. And you know, it's their way of de-stressing as well, so, and coping with the stress.
But will children bounce back? We expect them to be pretty resilient. How long a time frame can we expect for children to start feeling comfortable with the routine again?
It depends on the resilience of the children. It depends on home factors, what support they're having. And it also depends on how schools are coping with it. You know, I think it's multiple factors. Of course, the more resilient children are, you may find that this whole process is not so stressful. But, you know, to put a time frame to it, I mean, I've always said to parents, it takes a typical child maybe a month to settle into school. Mm-hmm. If your child has learning differences or any mental health issues, it may take them 3 months, 6 months. And, you know, it's a period of uncertainty. We don't know. At any point, we may be told our children are not going back to school again. And I think preparation is very important. Being supportive and making sure that parents work with children, with schools, rather than parents being seen to be against schools, that will help children as well. And, you know, I think let's wait and see. Every child's going to be different in terms of how long it's going to take them to bounce back.
Mm. All right. So let's go for a quick break. And when we come back, let's talk about, you know, the different routines and SOPs that children and parents have to follow when they go to school now, and how everyone can manage coping with the different routines and getting back into the groove of things. I'm speaking to Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, and Tan Ching Yi, educational psychologist, about going back to school in a pandemic. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Ik, and on the line with me, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, as well as Tan Ching Yi, educational psychologist. We're talking about kids going back to school after months of being closed as part of the movement control orders, the different phases of the MCOs. Schools have finally fully reopened. So we are discussing the transition challenges that children are facing, what parents are going through, how parents can help children to cope during this time. Ching Yi, for children who are feeling separation anxiety, and I'm sure that would be expected across the board, how have you been working with your children to reassure them? You have children in different ages, so it'll be interesting to hear from you. What works for children of different ages?
Yeah, I think this responsibility of preparing the children has really fallen on the shoulders of the parents. So I think you really need to think about the child's age and ability to understand. I think it's important for them to have information in a way that they can understand. So what's been prepared outside systemically as a country, as a school, to make it a safer place? I think they need to understand that although they wasn't safe for them at first, they had to stay at home, and now they're going back to school. The adults have been working hard to make sure that the environment is safer for them to go out. So I think that allaying that anxiety that they have of the COVID-19 virus. And I think it's important also to also tell them about so all the rules and the SOP to be prepared for them, and even show them a video if they have. I know some schools have taken the extent, you know, of preparing videos.
Yes.
From entry point to what they do at class, at recess, and at the time of dismissal as well. I think it's good to use those, especially it's very visual and you talk it through with your children so they're mentally prepared and they know what to do. I think the other thing is also empowering them. You know, a lot of things is not within their control, but they can do something to control, you know, their fears as well. That is to, you know, the government is talking so much about this 3W, isn't it? To wash, wear, and warn. Yeah, so I think as parents, we also teach them in the context of their environment. Mm-hmm. So in their school, to be very clear with them, especially when they have learning challenges, or we just now, Dr. Rajini talked about autism. Context is very important. So when you describe it to them, you know, in words, it may not work as well as actually showing them or taking pictures and running it through them in a very visual way. So where to go to wash hands. I didn't know my daughter's school, the primary school, Kebangsaan School, they've installed new sinks as well, closer to their classroom, so that enables them not to move around the school to go and wash their hands before they eat in their classroom. So that's something totally new. They also have this sanitizer where, you know, you step with your foot, you know, and it dispenses the sanitizer. So things like that are new to them. And so I think telling them, oh, you know, you don't have to wait. You have got sanitizer in your bag. You don't have to wait till you go to the toilet to wash your hands and things like that. So teach them. I think you need to show. So I think even with my teenage children, what does it mean to sanitize your lunchbox when you bring it back? Don't just chuck it into the cupboard, you know, because that's going to contaminate the rest of the things inside there. So I think showing and doing it along with them, getting involved is quite important. So I think once they feel that they have got control over the environment, a little bit more control, then they feel that, you know, it helps to allay their anxiety.
Dr. Rajini, do you think this is actually a great opportunity to be developing life skills in children and teaching them responsibility of taking care of themselves?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, this is really a great opportunity for us to do this, because essentially we're sending them to school, and yes, there are teachers around, but essentially the kids are going to have to step up, regardless of age or ability in some ways. So I think this is a great opportunity. But we've got to understand, like Chingy says, you know, depending on age and ability. And I stress the ability, because I know of teens who are still not able to look after themselves, despite not having any disabilities. And so it's about, you know, prepping them, training them, helping them to prepare checklists for themselves. So I would take this as a great opportunity to develop organizational skills. You know, at home, having little checklists with your child and making sure everything's there, that they've packed it, they can take this checklist back with them to school, making sure that, you know, there's a checklist of when you come home, what you need to do. You know, if you're using cloth masks, and I hope many schools are using cloth masks and not disposable ones, that they have to wash them. Things like that. So I think it is a good time to start teaching children responsibility. And I hope parents do that and not throw the buck at teachers.
Chingy mentioned eating in classrooms because there won't be that traditional recess time anymore where the children go to the canteen to eat. You know, there's also for some schools, they're cutting down on the physical education sessions, the PE sessions, on co-curricular activities. So all of these are such a big part of schooling life. So Chingy, what do you think the impact is going to be with the gap left from the lack of these activities?
I think that children are incredibly adaptable and resilient as well. So I think it's very natural for them to want to be physical and to move around, especially the younger ones. So initially, I think it will be very frustrating when the teachers have to restrict them. And I've heard from some of my younger friends who have got preschool children as well, how they come back and they cry because they have to sit at the desk, they cannot share toys. That is very frustrating. It's very natural for children to hug and touch and it be sensorial, you know. So I think initially, but as I say, you know, if that is done consistently and you show them, I think they will learn to find different ways, and they may be creative as well. So they will find different ways of talking to their friends across the room or, you know, making up games that they can play. And I think things like, you know, there are a lot of games that you can still play, that you can still connect. It's not about that physical touch, isn't it? Sometimes it's about connecting. So I think we need to allow children to find different ways and not be too restrictive. So the teachers also have to be a little bit flexible. They can play chase because that doesn't involve, touching or race, racing games, you know, it doesn't involve touching. Competitive taking turns games, that doesn't involve touching. And I think as parents, we need to also compensate for the lack of physical activities. Mm-hmm. We need to make that quite intentional because it is an integral part of their lives. So take walks. There's still a lot of things you can do. Skate, mm-hmm. Go to the park to walk. So take it upon ourselves to enable that.
Dr. Rajini, you're nodding along. You definitely agree with the parents' part.
Definitely.
I mean, we still have the weekends, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, Chengyi, you're right. As parents, we have to sort of take on this role a little more. Understandably, I think schools are not introducing this yet because they want to wait and see whether they can cope with the current SOPs. I think there's so many. I feel sorry for the teachers. And really, a shout out to them for what they've been doing. And I think as parents, we have to compensate. And you know, physical activities is one way of de-stressing. And if you can't do it on the weekdays, then make sure you fill it up at the weekends.
What would be some of your other concerns, especially if we look across the different age groups? Maybe we start with preschoolers. What are some other things that you'd like to highlight as they transition back?
I think apart from what we've talked about, also don't forget that, you know, in terms of exposure to illnesses, I think our bigger enemy right now is dengue. Dengue cases are rising.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we've had more deaths from dengue in the last couple of months than we have in terms of COVID. So I think we have to be very careful of that. And, you know, I know parents are sending their kids in earlier to school, that dawn period. Mm-hmm. We need to watch that and make sure that your children also have protection from dengue. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of preschoolers as well, as Chengyi mentioned, you know, it's about making sure that they have that outlet in terms of social interaction with physical distancing, because I think that's very, very crucial in terms of their overall social emotional development, and that has an impact on all the other aspects of development and learning. So we've got to make sure that we're not just keeping an eye on SOPs and keeping them safe from illnesses, but also are we making sure that we give them enough to feed that social emotional development.
Chengyi, what would be some ways that then we can make sure the social development continues?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of ways you can do that. I mean, even sitting at your desk, children can play singing games, for instance, you know, take turns to sing. I sing one part and then you sing the next part, because that's about tuning in to another person. Playing games like charades, you know, that's trying to read each other's mind and body language. So those socialization process can continue despite sitting in your own desk and being away from one another. Yeah, talking. Language skills are developed when they go to school with the opportunity to interact with others. So talking can continue. You don't stop talking, cannot, you know, just because you can't be too close to each other. Yeah, so that goes on. I totally agree, Rajini, about the dengue. I think I know more people with dengue than with COVID. So yeah, it is something that we should have a balanced perspective, I think, because we are too COVID out at the moment.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. What about for older children, especially teenagers? Do you think we are going to see more use of gadgets and social media to replace what they can't get from normal interactions? And Dr. Rajini, I know how you feel about gadget use. What do you think?
You know, Shari, this COVID, with my daughter being stuck at home and I have a 14-year-old, she has used the gadget a lot more. I mean, not just for school, but for social interaction, and I've encouraged that. You know, for a teenager not to be stuck at home with parents 24/7. I mean, not that my husband and I are at home, but still to be stuck at home and not be with friends. Yeah. You know, this is the phase in life where my friends are everything, my parents are just the devils who are there to rule my life. It is so important for them to be connected, and I've closed one eye to that. And my much older children, who obviously I was much stricter with, have been trying to police her. But I've also had to set them down and say, look, you didn't go through COVID-19 as a 14-year-old. You're going through it as a 22-year-old and 19-year-old. It's very different. Your brains are more mature. Mm. You can understand more. So, I've even allowed her to go on social media, something that I've resisted for a long time. Mm. So I think we have to accept it, but we have to monitor it. Our teens are not young adults. They are not adults who can think rationally. The brain wiring is not mature yet. So there's a lot of impulsive behavior. So, I think we have to accept that, yes, screen time has increased. But we can still monitor and make sure that they're not going astray or using it excessively to the point that it's depriving their sleep, their food, and even their outdoor physical activities.
Mm. Ching-Yi, what do you think are some other concerns for teenagers?
First, I have to say that I feel that Ranjini has just described my family as well. So I think lots of family out there are feeling the same with their teenagers. There's such a vulnerable stage of life, and this lockdown is really very unnatural for them. They only have us, parents and family, as their outlet, and they don't have their usual leisure activities. So I think this is definitely a time where they struggle with a lot, especially with their self-image, because they determine who they are a lot among their friends. So this lack of social support is really a difficult time for them, and they may have adjustment disorders. I am aware of some families with those kind of problems, sleeping, odd times. So I think the boundaries are still needed because we are still their parents. So as Ranjini said, we need to help them to have those boundaries, right sleeping time, but at the same time, understand their predicament, and it's probably harder than for us not to have this social outlet or ability to see and touch their friends and play games and have their usual routine that keeps them, comfortable and happy. Mm. But I also think that it's not all doom and gloom. So there's actually a silver lining also in this, because if they do, come out of it and they learn how to manage this, I think it's a way of developing resilience in life, and that can be something that will help them later. So I think a lot of it's a really good testing time, at least for my teenagers. I really feel that it is a testing time to see whether they have that problem-solving ability, the ability to mobilize their support. So with my two teens, I find that with one, she definitely coped much better than the other, because she was able to mobilize her support. And as Ranjini said, I have to close one eye, all that video of K-pop or whatever has been, TikTok or whatever has been, on the screen more, but they needed it. They needed it, yeah.
What do you mean by mobilizing support, Ching-Yi?
Yeah, so I can see with my 14 going on 15-year-old, she checks in with her friends more often. And what they do is they watch movie together after they finish their classes at night, and just a downtime. And it sounds crazy. They're all watching on their own screen, and they are calling each other and they're laughing out loud. Mm. It sounds like they are just entertaining themselves in the room, but they're actually connecting with one another. Yeah, so I feel that because she had this social support, even though from a distance, it really helped her to get through the 4 months. Whereas I had another one who's perhaps not as resilient, who also was a little bit more withdrawn, who's more internalizing in her way of looking at things. So, she didn't reach out as much to her friends and she was more into her schoolwork. So I can see, it really is very much an individual thing. And I think as parents, we need to watch out so we can help those who are a bit more vulnerable and, catch things before it goes a little bit out of hand.
So when we come back, I just want to find out then, how do parents help the children if they fall into the latter category of perhaps not being able to reach out for that support and connection? Do we step in and try to make things right for them? You know, how do we hold their hands through this without actually doing everything for them? So we'll just go for a quick break and come back and address that question. I'm speaking to Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, and Tan Ching Yi, educational psychologist, about going back to school during this COVID-19 period now that the lockdowns have been lifted. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. We're talking about going back to school on today's show now that schools have reopened across Malaysia for all stages. So joining me on the show today is Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, as well as Tan Ching Yi, educational psychologist. And we're talking about what issues children could be facing as they transition, different age groups we would expect, sort of different kinds of challenges, but also different types of personalities, how one child has coped with the lockdown, perhaps in a more resilient manner, being able to reach out to friends, using, let's say, social media or the phone to manage the gap, to manage the void between them and their friends, and to bridge that gap. But Ching Yi, before the break, you said that another child could be very different and not be able to make that connection with their friends, even though their friends are right there. Just a phone call away or just a chat away, right? Dr. Rajini, how then do parents help children who are going through those issues?
I think firstly, it's understanding your child and, you know, understanding the fact that with teens, that social connection is very, very important. And, you know, I think if, you know, if your child is not reaching out to friends, maybe trying to intervene by organizing something that, you know, now that they can all meet up outdoors, etc. Maybe, you know, organizing something that they can do together outdoors, you know, or play badminton or, you know, just go out for a picnic or something like that. I think as parents, we should initiate that or even having some friends over in small groups because we are allowed that. And I think that's very important. And I have to say, you know, I encouraged my child to do that. One, you know, just 2 or 3 weeks ago when, you know, they eased a lot of the changes, I encouraged my daughter to say, have your friends over at the house. You know, there's no harm in that. And she did. And then I think that was really nice of them. I mean, it was just three of them together, but it obviously meant a big deal to the three of them. And this time I shut my, you know, I didn't have rules. I sort of let them have what they want to do, buy what they want to on in terms of food, etc. So it was nice to see that they could get connected. And I would encourage parents to try and do that as much as possible. And, you know, I think in light of the fact that things may lock down again, I think we have to be prepared for that. It's very important that we then show children that there's so many different ways that they can get connected. Mm. And, you know, it was very interesting at the start of the MCO, and I knew my daughter felt very lost. And I was giving her suggestions about, well, you know, I heard about this group, they're doing face masks, that another group was doing something else. But she didn't want to hear it from me. But the minute someone from her school reached out and said, hey, you know, I'm in this group that's making face masks. Do you want to do it? She jumped on it. And that showed me how important, you know, peers are at this stage. Mm-hmm. And I think parents need to understand that and not fight that. I also think it's important that parents have fun family time. And, you know, sometimes not just being a parent, but doing crazy things like TikToks or playing silly games that they want to do, that helps them, you know, mm-hmm. that we get down to their level and try and do things at their level.
I totally agree. I think you need to get into your children's world sometimes. So as parents, we need to be also resilient and adaptive because mm-hmm. I think we can, you know, if we are inflexible, I think it also makes it worse and our children will be inflexible as well and we are anxious. It's very contagious. So I totally agree about the TikTok, because we definitely did a TikTok dance together as a family, just for the fun of it, just to let our hair down, because life is already hard enough. So we needed to have some fun and some family times. And so when the teenagers dictate, oh, let's do a TikTok, you know. So my husband and I say, yeah, let's, even the, my mom.
Intergenerational.
Yes, exactly. I think the family time, we could also see that this is a good time to have as a family and to strengthen those family ties, you know, increase that cohesiveness and teach them that our family is here for one another. I think as many families have made different recipes together as well, so getting the family together. So I think it's finding, making the best out of the difficult situation as well, while you, you know, help them adapt and cope with things. I think there's a lot of research coming out to say that, you know, this is posing a lot of mental health threat to our, especially young people, adolescents, rates of anxiety, depression, and even suicide is going up. So I think we don't wait until we see trouble. Mm-hmm. I think these are the things that we do to prevent them along the way. So I think it's good to practice family times and all the things that we've shared. Yeah.
From a learning perspective, Ching Yi, what are your thoughts about kids who are or who have fallen behind in terms of their studies? You know, half the year is gone. Some kids are preparing for exams. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's to a certain extent to be expected, because it's not the same as before. And I think unless your child is very independent. And, you know, they take a lot of initiative. But what I think it's good is the exams being postponed or cancelled. Mm-hmm. So it's less pressure on exams on some of our children.
And parents.
I don't think it's really a bad thing. But for some children, I think those who are maybe from more vulnerable families, those who are in the lower economic group, maybe those with language difficulties or those with learning challenges, I think that could be something that they have coined a term called COVID slide to explain children falling behind. As we know, some children need lots of repetitions, and learning online, sometimes teachers cannot give the individual attention and they move too fast or they cannot understand. So inevitably, there will be some achievement gaps. So I think parents need to take a balanced view about this. Not to get too hung up about the academics, but to realize that it's also a time for adjustment. And I think the opportunity to catch up will slowly come. It's not the most biggest priority, I think. So I think we need to also think about that, and not put too much pressure on our children.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we need to be mindful also that it's not just us in this situation. It's the whole world, in effect, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So I think benchmarks may be changed as a result. But, you know, for the betterment of society, in the sense that we don't stress out our kids further by stressing on the academics.
I just want to very quickly look at the SOPs in schools now. And perhaps for some children, things like wearing a mask all day, face shields, physical distancing. I mean, I'm pretty sure there'll be hits and misses when it comes to being able to comply with it, you know, 100%. Perhaps, Dr. Rajini, just some tips for parents and children themselves, if they're old enough to do this, if they're struggling to follow the SOPs or, you know, overall, if they're having problems readjusting. And I'm sure you can have conversations with your teachers. How do you think parents and children can talk to the schools about this?
I think, you know, what's important is SOPs are there as to help protect society as a whole. So if your individual child, say, for example, cannot wear a mask for prolonged periods, then we say, okay, take mask breaks, but, you know, make sure you have enough that you can change. And, you know, that can be discussed with the school. Now, I know schools already are having recess. So recess is the time that they take off their masks when they're having lunch, etc. My advice to parents is you don't need to send your child with a disposable mask. Cloth masks are also protection, and you can make, you know, your own cloth masks. And I think there's a video on the WHO and the CDC website on how to make cloth masks effective. And actually, I would encourage using cloth masks as opposed to disposable masks. I already have seen children who developed eczema, I know even my clinic assistant is allergic to certain types of disposable masks, where she tends to get sneezing bouts, etc. So I think it's a, you know, test trying it out at home. If your school has an SOP where they say it must be a disposable mask, then talk to them about having cloth masks. Mm-hmm. You can even have those face shields as well. And so for the younger children who cannot keep cloth masks on, talk to schools about having the face shields on instead of a cloth mask. Mm. You know, and you can make it fun, make it like a superhero type. But, you know, talk to schools and explain why, and maybe get some advice from doctors if you are not sure if it's the cloth mask. You know, I myself am developing rashes, and it's interesting. It's sort of around my mouth, and I was thinking, why is this happening? Mm. And a colleague at work who's a dermatologist says, it's your face mask because your rash is around your mouth and your nose, and it's because you're having it on for prolonged periods. Mm. So maybe, if you know, that's something that, you know, you can put some creams on as a barrier, etc. So there are ways of getting around them. I think, and always be mindful, if your child is not well, don't send them to school. Not only are you protecting your child from picking up something new, you are also preventing other children from falling sick.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a tough time all around for everyone. And as a parent, I think looking at children wearing face masks, everything feels so dystopian. And at the same time, you know, they have to go back to their routine, and we want to get them out of our hair as well. We're struggling with our own work challenges also, you know, juggling working from home, different schedules, financial issues. So just perhaps a reminder from each of you before we sign off today, some small things we can do on a daily basis just to check in on kids. And I'm not talking about homework here, just checking in that kids are doing okay. What do you think, Jingyi?
I think we need to check ourselves first. Mm-hmm. That we are okay. So look after ourselves as parents. That means having time, you know, to also reflect and have a good meal, a good sleep. I think for our children, being available, I think it's very easy to be caught up day by day on the different things that are, you know, keep evolving. So I think one of the things I try to do is when they come back from school, I just stand at the gate and welcome them home. Mm. Yeah. And I guess congratulating them for getting through, especially the first week, getting through first week of school. And I think that support and availability, if we can, I think some of us work and we are not there to welcome them at the gate, but you know, find different ways that works for your family. I think we need to balance up all the different perspectives. I think some parents who struggle with job changes, lifestyle changes, economic, financial challenges, need to think about the priorities. And I know some parents have decided not to bring their children back to school yet. So I think all those things is very much on individual families' coping mechanism. And you need to do what works for you and what works for your family.
Mm. Dr. Rajini?
Communicate with your children, you know, talk to them about your day, your challenges, and hopefully they then open up about theirs as well. You know, share the fun things that happen in school, the funny things that may have happened in school. Mm-hmm. Talk about the positives, not just the negatives. Mm-hmm. Listen to them. I think, you know, we need to be there to listen to them. And, you know, if you connect with them, you will pick up when they are feeling down or when they are not coping. And I think that's important, that, as you know, Chingyi says, you want to be picking up kids before they start cutting themselves to show you that they are unhappy, before they start to, you know, act out in such a big way that it's so disruptive for the whole family. So talk, share, and listen, I think, is very important. And just keep reminding them that, you know, times are bad for everybody around the world. And you can see in countries where they haven't been protecting themselves, they've been taking a very lackadaisical approach, that cases are rising very rapidly, mm-hmm. and that we are still lucky here in Malaysia. And we want to keep it that way. So,
all right. Yeah. Thank you so much to Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, and Tan Ching Yi, educational psychologist. We've been discussing going back to school in a pandemic. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.